The Braingasm Podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. To get a free 30-day trial and one free audiobook of your choosing, go to www.audibletrial.com/braingasm or click the link on braingasmpodcast.com. Help us help them help you. The rare win-win-win. Hey, Cheska, do you ever buy anything on Amazon?
Well, yes, Ben, I do.
Did you know that you can go to braingasmpodcast.com right now, click the banner ad for Amazon, and everything you buy, we get a kickback from?
Really? What was that URL again?
That's braingasmpodcast.com. Click the banner ad at the top, go to Amazon, and everything you buy helps support the Braingasm Podcast. And the best thing is, it doesn't cost you a dime. Warning, this episode is not an invitation to get the Braingasm logo tattooed on your body.
The Braingasm Podcast.
And welcome to the Braingasm Podcast, episode number 134. I don't know why I just said. I was trying to figure out the significance of 134, and for some reason in my head, the first idea that I had for how to signify 134 was to be like one, and then I realized that 1, 3, and 4 are not consecutive numbers. So that was a real moment that just happened there. You got to witness my unprecedented stupidity. So congratulations for that, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Yay.
Which is the new tagline, Braingasm Podcast, Ben's unprecedented stupidity.
Jesus.
It's good. It's good times. I feel like we haven't talked in forever. Well, doesn't it feel like last week was like the longest like episode since?
Yeah, I don't know why. Like it's... This whole weekend's been really long. Like, I had, like, a pretty meh weekend. So it was, like, it wasn't bad, but it was, like, Friday I was supposed to get my thigh tattoo. But, like, unforeseen circumstances, my tattoo artist had to cancel, which is fine. It's totally okay. It was, like, I was halfway there. I was, like, so ready to go. And then I'm, like, I have to go back home, and I have to find things to occupy myself with now. And I felt, like, such a fucking loser because I was so bummed out.
But, in like... could you ever, this is the thing I love about like this kind of thing. Could you imagine explaining this to like a caveman or something and be like, okay, so here's the problem. Here's why my day was unfortunate. So I was planning on going to a place and having a person shove a gun with needles into my skin repeatedly over and over and over again. So that, and what they were going to do is they were going to inject my skin with ink. And it was going to be excruciatingly painful, and it was going to swell up for the next few days, and I'd have to rub ointment all over it and keep it nice, and otherwise it'll get scabby, and you know, you don't want to get infected. But you know what? My plans, that great Saturday that I planned for myself, that didn't get to happen. So what I had to do, I had to fill my time with other stuff. Can you believe how unfortunate this is that I didn't get to endure an intense amount of physical pain to mutilate my body and then have to recover from that for days just so I could show off?
Oh my God, you make me sound like such a bitch.
I'm just saying. Not you in particular, but it's such a weird concept to say like... Like that's like saying, like, "Oh man, my appointment to get kicked in the nuts fell through. So now what am I going to do with myself?" Like,
but it was like I came home and I just ended up playing like I just ended up learning like songs on the bass guitar for like 4 hours because I was like I have nothing else to do with my life. Oh, and then Saturday I had to go home to house sit for my mom because she was away. But then Sunday, like it was like earlier in the week, I did like little flash art drawings just cause I was bored and I wanted to play with my markers. My friend who's a tattoo artist in Jersey, he's like, I really like this design that you did and I really want to use it. How about you come down and I tattoo it on you? I'm like, will you clean it up and make it look super nice? Because mine looks like shit. And I got a free tattoo on Sunday.
Wow.
This is like a friend I've known for years and like for like literally years, he's wanted to tattoo me. And I'm like, I just don't have the time to drive down like 2 hours to go to Jersey. I don't have the money and I can't afford the trip. So it's like Sunday comes around. I'm like, I've got nothing to do. I come home. I drop everything off. I get Matt. We go in the car, drive 2 hours to fucking Jersey, which was the worst fucking ride I've ever taken. We hit all the traffic.
All the traffic?
In like 1 in the afternoon. Who the fuck hits traffic at 1 on a Sunday?
Well, Sunday drivers.
Oh, God. But we get there, we got lunch, and I ended up getting tattooed. And I actually got to, well, because of that, I also got to hang out with my friend, which was pretty nice for not having seen him in, like, maybe the past 2 years. Yeah. So, free tattoo. Yay.
Not having any tattoo. I don't have any tattoos. I'll be the first to admit that. I don't know why anyone else would be admitting that I don't have any tattoos. That's a strange use of that expression in this context. No. I don't have any. To me, it's just weird. I don't know if it's just my brain, but like I would get a tattoo, but I've said this for years. It's like I would get a tattoo, but I am so – indecisive isn't the right word because indecisive implies that I have trouble making decisions. I have no problem making decisions. The problem for me is that I will never stop thinking about it.
Really?
Like, it's okay. So, to my mind, when I would describe someone as being indecisive, what I would say is like that person just has a fundamental incapability of deciding anything. Like, the idea of like deciding something and saying, okay, this is the final decision is just like they just can't do it. And I wouldn't put that's not what I would describe. For me, it's just more like, if you give me infinite amount of time, mm-hmm. I will take infinite amount of time. Like, I will never, like, I was thinking about, I was doing a show last night. And I was hosting a show last night, and the guy was like, "Hey, man, we're thinking about getting started pretty soon. Yeah, I see you're preparing. How much time do you think you need? And then before we can get started." And then I told him, "I'm just like, dude, you can give me, like, I will never stop. Like, you could sit there and be like, okay, 4.5 hours from now, mm-hmm. Ben, are you ready? Do you need more time? Oh, maybe. I mean, pen will not stop moving. It's the kind of thing. You need to give me a deadline. You need to tell me, okay, Ben, here's what you need to get done, and you need to get done by this time. Otherwise, I will never stop." Like, it's just, I've written essays mm-hmm. where I've written them like 4 times.
Oh my God. I should just have you write my essays for me.
I just keep going back. I keep going back because the thing, and it's funny because when I was, I've not always been a good student. I think, I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I have a checkered history academically. I was always a smart student. Like I was always smart enough to get by.
Yeah,
but I was the laziest student. Like I never did homework. I never did homework. If you assigned any homework, it was not getting done. It was just not going to happen. By about, I can't remember when it was, but it was like college, I think, before I finally said, "Hey, why don't I start trying? That might be fun." And then, past that point, it was that's when I became the guy I am today.
Oh my God.
But like when I was a bad student, I never, like, it's the thing, like for me, because I was lazy. So it was like if I wrote anything, it was gospel. Like mm-hmm. if I wrote a sentence, it was the best sentence I'd ever written because I didn't want to write another sentence. So no matter what it was, it could be the stupidest thing I'd ever said in my entire life. It could be not make any sense at all. But I never would go over it because like, oh, I did that already because I don't want to do it again. And when I became a good student, that switch flipped to such an insane degree. Now I am merciless with my own material. Like the amount at which I will throw out material mm-hmm. is absurd. Like there's nothing. I will look at my own stuff and just be like, that sucks. That's stupid. I hate it. I hate it. Dumb. Bleh. Worst. Blah. And I'll just go through and I'll do it. And I'll keep rewriting as long as I can, which I think is why, like, some guys and girls can do that where they can like get ahead. They could be like, oh, I got this done and now I'm ahead of the game.
Yeah.
No, not me. However long you give me to work on an assignment is exactly how long it will take me to complete that assignment. Like my work output is gaseous in the sense that it fills whatever space it's put into. It's not like an ice cube. It doesn't just sit on the table just waiting. It just fills the air. It just goes out everywhere. So, but yeah. So but with me, where I was taking it back to tattoos though, mm-hmm. is that's how I am with tattoos. Where I would get a tattoo, but I would never be able to figure to actually settle on something. I would never be able to do that because I would always be constantly updating it, always be constantly thinking about it, always be constantly doing that and this and that and this and that, and just it just wouldn't work.
Really? I like a lot of my tattoos, like maybe save for like a few of them, have just been like ones that I've actually like sat on for a while and like really decided if it's something that I, cause yeah, obviously it's permanent. Like I wouldn't fucking know that, but
yeah,
it's, you know, like I have maybe like 3 impulsive tattoos and I don't regret them. It's not bad, but it's like my feet, the ones I have on my feet, I actually waited like 5 years before I actually said, okay, this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Cause it was like, I'm not going to, if I'm going to like torture myself and get my feet tattooed, I better fucking like what's on my feet.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, that's the other thing with me. I hate needles. Like, so.
I hate needles too, but.
And like, that's the thing, like tattoos for me, it's like, well, okay, so you get to permanently affix something to your body, and the way that, the method by which you do this is one of the things you hate more than anything in the entire world.
Exactly.
It's literally the weirdest, like if you were to picture, it's like, okay, let's take a Venn diagram of tattoos and things that Ben likes. It's like, it would just be two circles. There would be nowhere that they converge. Like, it's absurd to me.
Like, the way that I see it is, like, needles and tattoo needles are two totally different things to me. Like, a syringe, like, someone putting a syringe in me or an IV, like, that is what I have the most issue with because I don't like seeing shit go into my body like that or, like, things coming out of my body. Like, I have a problem with, like, seeing my own blood sometimes when it's getting drawn. Like, fuck that noise. I don't want to see that. Even when I had to get stitches, I did not want to see them put the anesthesia needle in my hand so that...
Yeah. No, I know exactly. Sorry not to cut you off, but it's like I it's funny that you mentioned like the anesthesia and the needles and stuff like that. Like I'm weird like that because I don't like needles and I don't like seeing needles. I don't like being in hospitals. I don't like there's something about the way they design hospitals that just it makes me like really uncomfortable.
Hospitals are terrible. I don't like hospitals either.
Why they do it the way they do, I don't understand. It's like I don't know if it's a Pavlovian thing where like I dislike the way that hospitals look because I dislike hospitals or it's because I dislike hospitals because of the way they look, but like whatever it is. But like it's funny that you say that because whenever it comes to like anything that I have to do to myself,
mm-hmm.
I turn into a combat medic.
Well, like, yeah, because it's totally different when it's yourself.
Mm-hmm. Like people are amazed like with the stuff that I've like. Okay, so let me give you an example. I was working in the warehouse and one of my fingers had gotten infected like underneath the because I was biting my fingernails a lot. I actually stopped. I started biting them a little bit again. I got to stop again, but. I was biting my fingernails really badly, and I used to bite them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten infection underneath the cuticle, like wherever the bridge thing where it meets your finger.
Yeah.
And so I got a nasty infection under there, and so it was really pissing me off. So this is my solution. I'm in the warehouse. I take an X-Acto knife
and
out of my pocket. I put some hand sanitizer on it to sterilize it, and then I just lance it myself with an X-Acto knife.
Oh,
in the warehouse. Like that's something that I would do and that's something that like you could hear that and be like just screaming like, oh my God, that's disgusting.
Oh.
But to me, that's nothing. But the idea of like a trained medical professional putting a needle in my arm, that wigs me out for some reason. And I don't know why. Like,
I've had to have someone do that to me before. Like I had a piercing in my ear, like in my ear in the cartilage and it got really infected to the point where there was an abscess on the back of it. And I actually had to ask my ex-boyfriend, I'm like, can you please take this X-Acto knife or this box cutter? I forgot which one it was. We sterilized it with a lighter. I'm like, can you just lance this thing and get it off of me and get the earring out of my ear?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no. And it was like the most terrifying experience of my life only because I couldn't see it and I couldn't do it myself.
I was saying this to someone the other day. I was like whenever you're in a moment, like you don't know what kind of a person I maintain you never know what kind of a person you are until you're put in a scenario which is like a life or death or like you mm-hmm. need to act right now moment. Because I never would have thought about this about myself because I got such like a scatterbrain kind of like there's always stuff going on in my head and mm-hmm. like it's never like peaceful up there. It's never like calm. It's always like multiple things happening at once. But like, if there's a crisis scenario, or if I'm in a situation where it's like, okay, this is a put up or shut up crisis scenario,
yeah,
I just become so absurdly calm and single minded, and like, that's what I said, like I turn into a combat medic, like I become like it's just when there's a scenario going down and it's like getting serious, it's like, all right, here's what needs to happen: you there, me here, like it's just it's the only time in my entire existence where my brain is like single minded and focused on one thing. And when it does, it's just it's weird and it's just odd because you would think like because some people in a scenario like that they don't respond very well.
Yeah, no, like it's you kind of do kind of find your resolve to see like what kind of person you are when there's an emergency, when it involves either yourself or like someone else that's close to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. But I don't know. Like, it's two totally, like, back to the conversation. I guess it's just two totally different experiences having someone, like, basically jab you with a very long syringe or put an IV into your arm. And the worst part is when they fuck up, like, you have all this horrible bruising because they break the vacuum in your vein. Or, you know, having someone who's a skilled hand, like, with a needle that's going rapidly in and out of your skin, injecting ink into, like, maybe the next few layers of your epidermis so it's there permanently when, you know, you don't really feel anything but, like, dragging along your skin. I'd rather take that than, like, having any kind of injection whatsoever.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
It is, isn't it? I know.
It's absurd. Like, it really is. It's a crazy, crazy, crazy thing.
Yeah.
With the tattoo thing, I always put permanent in, like, quotation marks, because I just assume with all of the advances in medical technology and, like, all the people who are getting tattoos now, that I guarantee at least 80% of them are going to regret.
Oh, yeah.
We're on the cusp of, like, unprecedented and amazing advances in tattoo removal technology.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like that's – it's one of those weird things. Like, you know how, like, conservatives feel about, like, global warming?
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh, who cares about it? Like, I mean, sorry. The conservatives who agree that it exists, which still boggles my mind, but most of them don't. The ones who agree that it does exist, they're always like, well, science will figure it out. We'll figure out a way to save ourselves. We'll figure – you know, we'll do it. You know, we'll come up with a new technology that will make everything okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how they feel about that is how I feel about tattoo removal. Like, that's where – that's eventually we'll get like, oh, they'll figure it out. Like, you know, it's – you know, that's just my opinion. So, like, you see people, like, when they got these tattoos. Like, I just got to imagine that by the end – by the time, like, I'm, like, 60 –
mm-hmm.
They'll have a way to remove them completely no scarring whatsoever.
Yeah, because like I know my cousin recently went through laser removal for one of his tattoos. I don't know which one of his tattoos. Like he had like maybe four, and one of them was like completely fucking stupid. But it was stupid to me. I don't know how stupid it was to him. But I don't know which one he got removed. But it was like 3 or 4 sessions it took to get all of it off, and he was like, he was just miserable about it. I'm like, well, look, maybe you just shouldn't have gotten the fucking tattoo in the first place.
Yeah.
But then, like, what is it? There was someone who, like, it was a rapper. He got skin grafted over his arm to cover up all of his tattoos.
I think
so
that happened.
Yeah, so he could tattooed again.
That happened to Travis Barker from Blink-182.
I think they did that with, like, Pharrell, too. I think. Yeah.
Well, I think because Travis Barker, because he was in that plane crash.
Oh, my God.
And do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I think he lost a bunch of skin from, you know, the plane crash. So I think that a lot of his tattoos got, when they grafted skin and, like, did skin transplants, stuff like that to fix him up.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of his tattoos got basically wiped out. So that's the first time I remember hearing about that. Like, the idea that, like, you get new skin and guess what? No more tattoos. It makes sense. Like, it just, you know, that's how they would get rid of it.
It's crazy.
But, yeah, it is kind of odd. You know, the thing with me, and I'll say this, with tattoos, and I don't have anything against people with tattoos, and I know I'm coming down as overly negative on tattoos.
It's all right. I'm used to it.
the thing with me is that I've never understood is when people get so many. Like, at some point in your life, like, I know people who I see them, and I actually met a guy recently who's just, like, covered, completely covered almost. Like, there's 10% of his skin not covered in tattoos. And to me, that's like, doesn't make any sense because you can't even really at that point make out what any of them are.
When you have like an exorbitant amount of tattoos. Yeah.
Yeah. When you get like a sleeve tattoo.
Well, I actually want a sleeve, but I want it so it actually is cohesive.
I don't know. It's just to me, it's like, okay, so you get like one tattoo on one piece of skin, you know, like one piece, like say, like pick like your upper shoulder.
Okay.
You get one tattoo there. Like that one tattoo, you can see what it is. You can clearly make it out. You know, from a distance, you can get a general idea of what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, if your goal is to decorate yourself so that you're displaying something, then that you've accomplished that goal.
Yeah.
But if you get like an entire sleeve of tattoos done, then you can't like from like 10 feet away, it just looks like a strange muddy blur.
Oh, well, that's like, you know, the point is like for them not to be seen from like so many feet away. Like you could see them like, you know, 10 feet away, you could still make out what they are most of the time. But, like, when you're, like, so far back, like, you know, it doesn't really fucking matter. But the whole point is, like, it's almost interactive art, too. Like, you know, it shows off, like, a bit of your own personality. So, like, it's almost an icebreaker when you meet people, whether they have tattoos or not. It's like, oh, this is really interesting. Like, can you tell me about it? Like, why did you get it? Like, do you really like sharks or something? Or, like, are you really into, like, deep sea diving? That kind of thing. Like, so it kind of sparks a conversation in a sense, which is like, you know, I like that kind of stuff. But I also don't like when people come up and grab my arm to see what's on my arm. It's like, oh my God, this is like the coolest thing I ever saw in my life. It's like, just stop touching me and maybe I'll show it to you.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only pet peeve I have.
If I were to go, like, if my tattoo philosophy, if I ever get tattoos, is go small but important.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not going to get a sleeve. Like, because the other thing, this is the other problem, is if you get, like 100 tattoos, you know, there's not 100 things in your life that are equally important to you. By about 70, you're reaching for stuff. Like, when you get to 70 things that are significant to you, then you're really into the bottom barrel of things that are significant to you. Like,
whether it's important to you or not, like, maybe I just really like mermaids, so I have a mermaid on my arm. So yeah. I'm like, that's pretty awesome.
See,
like,
that to me makes more sense. That to me, and that's the other way that I would, that there's two scenarios where I would go get a tattoo. Number one is if I finally find something that's so significant to me and I like so much and I think would look good. That's the other problem. I don't think people think about that.
Oh, well, people, like, they come up with the stupidest ideas, but then that's why you work with the artist, because they know how the piece is going to lay on your body and what they need to do to make it look good. That's why you collaborate.
So in my way of doing it would either be incredibly meaningful or completely meaningless. Like, there's anywhere in the middle ground, I'm going to talk myself out of it. So, like, it's either got to be something that is so undeniably and fundamentally meaningful to me that there's no possible way in any scenario at any point in any time that it won't mean something to me, or it has to mean literally nothing. Otherwise, if there's any in between, anywhere in the middle of that spectrum, mm-hmm. it's not going to happen. It's not going to work. Because I feel like that. What you're saying with the mermaid thing. Like, I got a mermaid tattoo. Why? I like mermaids. I like that, mermaids. That to me makes sense. That's never not going to be true. You're never going to sit there.
It's true. It's like, I'm not going to stop liking mermaids. I've liked mermaids since I was a fucking kid.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like I'm the kind of dude who'd walk in and be like, oh yeah, you got a tattoo. Hey, what's that tattoo for? I don't know. Looks nice.
Looks pretty cool. Well, yeah, like, a lot of people do, like, people have done that with, like, the tribal tattoos, and it's, you know, a lot of it's like, oh, you know, just, I really wanted a tattoo. It's like, well, now you have this really big black bar on you, unless, like, you're getting, like, traditional Polynesian art on you, which is also heavy blacks and, like, thin lines. But they're, like, the Polynesian art has a lot of meaning to it also, so it's like, I don't know, it's almost in poor taste if you just get it because you want it.
Yeah.
So it's like, I would say the same with the tribal, if you think about it in, like, in a cultural sense. It's like, it's kind of offensive to those who it actually means something to, for you to just slap some barbed wire on your arm and call it a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I don't know, to me, the tattoo thing, I don't know, it's a topic to me that I don't know very much about.
No, I know.
But, you know, I have a few opinions on it. It's not that I wouldn't get one. That's the funny part about it. Like I would. Okay, let me give you an example. Here's something that you might think, okay, hey, Ben, you've been doing this show for 3+ years now. Mm-hmm. It's been a very impactful and, you know, meaningful part of your life. Mm-hmm. Ben Whips, would you ever consider getting the Braingasm logo tattooed on any part of your body?
No.
Hell no. Hell to the no. Sorry about that, folks. We had a bit of a technical issue. But yeah, so I just said I would never get the name of the show, the logo of the – and this is the thing. I love the logo of the show. Like, I love
too.
Sawyer's logo that he did for us. It's very – like, it's great. I love it so much. Would I ever get a tattoo on my body? No.
I can't.
I would not do that. But you know why? Because that's that thing. And that's like the perfect example of something that falls in the middle of that spectrum where it's like it's in there and it's meaningful enough that it's not completely devoid.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like undeniably 100% knockout. Yes. Like that's not like the, you know, when I refer to something that's like so undeniably meaningful, mm-hmm. there's a very good likely possibility that that thing doesn't even exist. It's like that is – it's more of an ideal. It's more of a – like, for example, I don't do this, but you know how some people talk about like people's appearance and like rate them on number scales?
Yeah.
If I've ever engaged in that activity, which again, I don't like to do that much, but you know, every once in a while you do it with your buddies. But I never, ever, 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 ever give anyone a 10.
Well, I don't think anyone is a true 10.
Well, my theory about this is actually a philosophical theory. If you say that someone is a 10, you are saying that that is the peak of physical attractiveness. You are saying that that is the single highest attractiveness any person will ever achieve. No one will ever be more attractive mathematically than that person. At best, someone can only ever be as attractive. The best other person could be just as attractive. So really what you're saying, that's an impossible thing to say. So I never go higher than the 9. And like 10 is like, to me, 10 is not even a real thing. It's almost like it's a placeholder idea. It's just an idea that exists, but it doesn't really exist.
It's like black holes.
Yeah. So the brain, but I would never, and you think that Braingasm logo might be an idea, you know what I mean? Something that would make sense. No.
See, like, I could maybe justify, like, in another, if we do this show for, like, another, like, 5 years, I could justify getting, like, a small tattoo with you that matches. Be like, yeah, we have friend tattoos kind of thing. But I don't know. Nothing big like the logo.
Yeah. No. So it's just, but to me, so it would have to be something completely meaningful, like a smiley face or something.
Yeah.
You know, just something that's like, wow, it's a smiley. It was like, why do you have a smiley face tattooed? Smiley face, whatever. made you happy. You know, better than a frowny face. Like, you know, that's just my kind of theory on it.
Yeah, no, I totally understand where you're coming from. I'm not knocking you. I'm not like going against your opinion because it's your opinion. Like, I can't sway you to be like, oh, you need to like fucking love body art and all this other shit that I like because that's what I like. I don't care. Like, I think the only time I have a problem with it was like, I encountered it especially this week. And I'm going to preface this by saying I've been having problems with my boyfriend's mother for, like, the past month and a half due to other circumstances. But when I came back with this, I had this other tattoo that I got on Sunday. And we went to dinner impromptu, like, very impromptu dinner at his parents' house on Monday because he wanted to talk to his dad about possibly buying a motorcycle. But that's besides the point. So, like, the dog ran into my leg. They have a big black lab. And she's sweet, and all she wants to do is love on you. But she ran into my leg, and I winced, and she's like, oh, what's wrong? I'm like, oh, I got a tattoo Sunday, blah, blah, blah. And I showed her the picture. She's like, oh, it's nice, but, you know, you could always cover it up. And I'm like, well, what do you mean? She's like, well, you could always get it covered up someday. I'm like, I wouldn't have gotten it if I didn't want it.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Yeah, it's like she constantly, like, berated that point for probably most of the night. And it's like, I get it. You don't like tattoos. But I'm not your kid, and it's not your place to tell me what to do with my body.
Yeah, I do love that idea, and like the idea that like people, like, it's, I think it's going, it's got to go away now because it's just how many people have tattoos.
Yeah,
this idea that there's somehow like tattoo. If you have a tattoo, that makes you some kind of like you have to hide it. That's some kind of like that's some kind of disparaging thing. Like, you know, like wearing a T-shirt to a business meeting kind of thing. Like, oh, you got a tattoo? That's unprofessional.
Oh,
like,
God, no. There's more things that are way more unprofessional than tattoos.
Yeah. I feel like that's going away.
It's slowly going away, but until, like, the next generation dies out, like, the last old generation of older people kind of dies out, and we get kind of a fresh start, I don't think we're going to see a lot of tattoo or piercing acceptance in the workplace for another maybe, like, 10 to 15 years.
Yeah. I thought that someone said this, and I remember who it was. I thought it was a great idea. I think it was on the Nerdist podcast when they're talking to Charlie Hunnam, the guy who plays Jax on Sons of Anarchy,
mm-hmm.
Which actually might be a good transition point too. We're going to talk a little bit about Sons of Anarchy. That actually didn't occur to me until just now. So
it's okay.
Way to go, Ben. Way to go, Ben's brain working in the background to help him out. And he was on the Nerdist podcast, and he was talking about how they have – because obviously he doesn't have the Sons of Anarchy giant back piece in real life. Like,
well,
that's not a real tattoo. No. So they said that all the tattoos that they have on the show are fake. And the tattoos they get, the fake tattoos, they're like really, really, really high quality. Like,
wow.
Very expensive. And like he says the process of getting them on, they're like stickers basically. Like, but they're very expensive, and they last for a few days, I think. Like, I can't remember how much they were, but it was not cheap. Not as expensive as you're probably thinking. It's like $800 a one, but it was something like $70 per each one.
Yeah, that's still a lot for like a temporary tattoo that you're using for like on your actor. That's still a lot of money to spend.
But yeah, and then he said he had. I thought this is a great idea. He said what they should do is they should incorporate that. Every tattoo parlor should incorporate that. Mm. Basically, what they should do is when you want to get a tattoo, they take you in. You work with the artist to design the tattoo you want to get. They whip up basically a temp version of it that lasts like 3 days to a week or something like that.
Yeah.
You put it on. You wear it for a week. You see whether or not you like it. And then if you do like it by the end of the week, you come back and they put it on for reals.
Mm-hmm.
Just like almost like test driving a tattoo. And I'm like, that's a good idea. I wonder how many bad tattoos that people have ever gotten could have been because this is the problem. I don't think that all tattoos are wrong. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think people who get bad tattoos probably ruin it for people who get good tattoos.
Like, they do. And they really do. But it's like, I actually like that idea. And it's something that I wish I could see more of. Like there was like something floating around Tumblr. It was like, oh, you know, here's what you could try to do for yourself. If you want, you really want a tattoo, like you can make your own temporary tattoo by via this process. It'll last for a week and it lets you see if you really want to have it. I think honestly, they should implement that more at tattoo parlors, especially like with the late night crowd that comes in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because, like, of course they're not going to tattoo you if you're, like, you're drunk, you're high.
They're not allowed to.
They're not allowed to.
It's medically dangerous because your blood is thin.
Exactly. And
you'll bleed out.
I just feel like, you know, people making the appointments at that time, like, they really need to, like, kind of reevaluate before they put, you know, the money in to hold their spot for their appointment. That's the only thing, like, I wish that more shops would implement is, like, a temporary tattoo process that'll last you about maybe, like, 5 days, like, to, like, a business week.
Yeah, and like, you know, they could do it like, I'm not sure, like you could do like henna almost even.
Yeah.
That would last. Like, and just, again, not to say that getting your tattoo, it could be absolutely the case that this tattoo that you're getting is a great looking tattoo that is meaningful or its service is exactly what you want it to be and you'll be very happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, whatever, you have it for a week, you try it out as a temp, you go, yeah, this is exactly what I want. The other thing, you get to see it in action, you get to see it with your, you know, like you're wearing your usual clothes, like
mm-hmm.
how does it interact with your clothes? You get to walk around, see it from different angles, you're just hanging out, whatever, all of a sudden you see it there, like what does it look like from different angles, like
yeah.
you get to see it in that way. But, it, you know, and then if it's good, whatever, then you go back in, no harm, no foul. If it's bad, though, you'll get a chance to be like, okay,
it's a good,
this is how we should reevaluate. And then, yeah. I think it's. It's one of those things. The minute that I heard that as an idea, I'm like, why is this not bigger? Why is this not why is this not everywhere? This would be such a great idea.
It would be, but it's not.
But yeah. So as we were saying, this is probably a good transition to transition to Sons of Anarchy. So we're gonna talk non-spoilers about Sons of Anarchy for a bit, and I mean, we can get into spoilers. I've seen all the episodes, like every episode that they've made. Jessica stopped at a certain point, which yep. is a point that we're going to deal with in our discussion here. And so we're not going to say what the point was for people who haven't seen it. But just, you know, yeah. So tread lightly, I guess, if you haven't seen it, if you're that spoiler conscious, because we may still touch on a couple things, but we won't. We're going to go up. We're going to do our best not to be dicks about it. And then maybe at the end we'll talk more.
I'll try my best.
Spoiler-y. Yeah, yeah. Jessica, that's one thing. Jessica's really bad.
I'm like really bad about this.
Yeah, that's really. We've had many discussions about how we can. You know, it's all about finessing it. You don't want to come out and just say it. You want to finesse around it.
I kind of need you to lead me through the conversation most times.
Yeah, as we found out with The Walking Dead.
I'm sorry.
That's fine. It's funny to me. So, Sons of Anarchy. So the last time we talked about Sons of Anarchy, you had barely really kind of gotten into it. Matt was watching it and you were watching it
kind of watching
through
it.
Him, like just watching it over his shoulder when you're doing other stuff. And
yep.
So, and but,
it wasn't bad. Like I liked it. It got interesting as he told me more about it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And since that point, it sounds like you got more into it.
Kind of like with the later seasons, but like the middle of the road seasons, I guess, is how you would describe it.
That's pretty much how I would describe it.
Yeah.
In terms of quality. Yeah.
In terms of quality.
Yeah. No, it's funny because Sons of Anarchy is a show that I've had a very as I've documented on this very program, I've had a very love hate relationship with Sons of Anarchy. In that it used to be, for a while I considered it my favorite show. It was always like up there in terms of my favorite shows. Like when I watched it,
you talked about it like all the time.
And then at a certain point, it started to do stuff that I was very unhappy with, and it made me very, very, very upset. So, I actually stopped watching it for this latest season. I stopped watching it after the first episode, and then I came back to it after the season had ended, like months later. During the Christmas break, I came back to it after the season was over, and I binged through them all. So I have seen all the episodes. It's an interesting show. I don't even know at this point if I would call it a good show.
I don't know. I haven't seen the later episodes because, like you said, I kind of stopped watching it.
Yeah, Sons of Anarchy to me is a weird case, and this happens sometimes in television where it's an enjoyable show. It's a popular show. It has all the trappings of a good show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has all the elements that make a quote unquote good show, but it just, to me, it just never crosses that point of being like a good show, like really transcending. I'm trying to think of another example I can pick out, which is similar, that, you know, where a show like that, where it was always on the cusp of being a good show, and it was always kind of knocking on the door, but it never walked through the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that the longer Sons of Anarchy goes on, the less tolerant I'm becoming of it. Because the thing with it is that it is very, very, very repetitive.
It is. I will admit that.
The basic situation, like, and, you know, like, the basic story structure that you get in season one,
mm-hmm.
is the story structure you get in some degree to season two, and some degree to season three, and some degree to season four, and some degree to season five, and in some degree to season six.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they really don't ever break from it. And in the that's not a necessarily always a bad thing, because certain shows don't necessarily need to be different all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I would throw Doctor Who as an example of that, where Doctor Who can change a little bit, but essentially the structure of Doctor Who has remained the same for 50 years. But things around it have changed, but you know what I'm saying? Like, the basic story structure, the way that it's set up, has never really changed. So, but that works for Doctor Who. Whereas with Sons of Anarchy, I feel as if the longer it goes on, the more that I'm finding myself becoming less and less invested in the characters. So, yeah. So when they had in the first and second season, and into a certain some degree in the third season, where they had I really, really liked the characters, and I really was rooting for them, and I felt like I was really invested in Jax, Opie, Tig, Clay, Tara, Gemma, like all these characters.
Yeah.
I was invested in them, and the longer the show has gone on, the less invested I've become in them, and as a result, I'm not as interested in their story. So, like, the problem with that is that, so when the same story beats replicate,
mm-hmm.
it's the law of diminishing returns, because the thing that made me really invested in this in season one was the characters, and now in season six, when I'm not as into the characters, that means it just doesn't hit me as well as it did before. So,
yeah.
I'm interested to find out what you think, because, as I said, you stopped watching at a certain point, at a very dramatic point. And so I'm actually interested to find out. So, what did you think of the show prior to that? Like, were you already teetering on the edge of not watching it anymore, and that this was just the last straw?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, like, how to say it without giving too much away. Like, I really did, like, I like Jax, kind of. He sits kind of with me now. But I really like Opie. I really like Tig and what is his name? Chibs, I think. Yeah.
Chibs, yeah.
Yeah, I like him too. And like you were saying, Juice is kind of funny. He's a funny guy. Like,
yeah,
there's like the handful of people that I really like, and then it was just like the first season wasn't bad. Like, it kind of got me into it, and like, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, I wouldn't mind watching this. And like the second season, it was just like, holy fuck, this is getting so fucking boring, because it's just like the same fucking thing. Like, can I say just like one thing? Like,
yeah.
They're like, oh god, we have to go get the baby. Where's the baby? Who has the fucking baby? It's like fucking like, where's Sophia? Like, all over again.
And it's funny that you bring up, like, you bring up the baby thing, because the baby thing, and we're not gonna get into specifics of what we mean, but
yeah.
The baby thing is interesting to me, because you could look at that moment with the baby and what the resolution of that, of what happens with that storyline, as And the show, I had the same problem with Weeds when I watched Weeds, which is that I feel as if the show thinks that I like these people more than I do. And like that I'm rooting for them to a greater degree than I actually am.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess, okay, so we'll do a mild spoiler for season three. So this is a spoiler for season three. If you haven't seen it, you want, you know, we're going to get more spoilery as we go along.
Yeah.
But so there's the moment in season three where Jax sees the baby and, you know, where that with the adoption thing.
Yeah.
And the moment where it's like the choice to of whether or not he lets the kid go.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately he does. You know, if I remember correctly, he does, right?
So,
he
yeah.
says, yeah, he lets the kid go, and then their parents are murdered.
Yep.
That was a weird moment, because that moment to me was, that could have been the high watermark of the series, of the show, and a turning point for the show, where that was the idea, like Jax acknowledged, because the whole show has always been about Jax acknowledging the inherent unstable nature of his life.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he's growing as a human being, and the more he grows as a human being, the more he realizes that the life he leads, the people he associates with, the flag he flies is not conducive to a happy and healthy family life.
Yeah.
And that's the thesis of the show. And that was kind of the big, that was like the climax of that. And that was a really, 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 really good and effectively powerful moment.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that was season three, and they've had similar ideas throughout the rest of the series. And it's like, okay, I get it. Like, how many times is Jax going to try and get him out of guns? How many times is Jax going to try and get the club to get less murdery and less, you know, criminal and more straight? How many times is Jax going to say to Tara, how many times is Tara going to want to leave?
Oh, my God, I can't stand her.
And Jax is going to say, yes, we're going to get out. And then how many times is Jax, you know, how many times is all this? How many times is Gemma going to try and scheme? How many times? It becomes the same thing over and over and over and over and over again. And it's like, and then at a certain point, it's like,
now what?
They just don't know how to move forward. It's like, there was an interesting thing that happened in, I can't remember what season it was. I think it was season five, I guess, where... Or maybe at the end of season four, I guess, where, I guess, again, spoiler alert, where Jax becomes the president.
Yep.
And Jax had been vice president up to this point, and, you know, he's always been the vice president, the VP. Clay had been the president. Jax had been that guy. And it had always been Jax had one foot in, one foot out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay. And in that finale, it was the idea that, like, okay, Jax has finally taken both steps in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. They're finally taking the show in a different direction. They're finally going, okay, guess what? It's more of a tragedy now. The idea that, like, it was always kind of a tragedy. The idea that this guy who could get out, who could be better, he's ultimately he's stuck in this black hole.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't go anywhere with
that.
No,
they don't. And it kind of really sucks.
And like the minute the next season picks up, it's Jax again saying, I don't know about this club. We better get out. Like, and that's the problem I get with that. And like the thing that they do is like, they seem to just drive these absurd circumstances to try and return to the status quo.
It's like a really weird, like, MacGuffin device that they try to use each time.
Yeah. They'll introduce this idea of like change at the beginning of a season. And they do this every time. They'll introduce this idea that, okay, here's where everything is about to change. Here's mm-hmm. where the consequences are going to happen. Here's where shit's going to hit the fan. Here's where the story's going to move forward. And then they'll do it, and then they'll go for it. And then, like, you'll halfway through the season, like, holy crap, they're actually doing this. And then by the end of the season, they'll derive some ridiculous circumstance that reverts everything back to exactly how it was before.
Yep.
And it's like, because and it's almost as if it's the idea that they're in their minds, they're thinking like, well, this is what people want. But like, I'm sitting there watching this going like, what are you doing?
Yeah, no, it's just like, it's insanity. It's just the same thing over and over again. And it got to that point where it's like one thing happened. And I'm like, both of us were like, nope, no more. That was the last fucking straw.
Yeah. All right. So we've got a little bit of time. We got about 15 more minutes till we hit our hour. So here's what we're going to do. So I still think the show is worth watching through season three, maybe season four. It's one of those shows. This is what I'll tell you about this show. It's the same thing I would tell somebody about, like, The West Wing or, you know, like, certain shows like that, where I do think that the beginning of it and the first few seasons are worth watching.
Yeah.
Even if the show goes nowhere, I think those episodes and those seasons stand on their own.
Yeah.
So I would tell you to watch them. And then if you start to feel as if the show is getting, if any of the criticisms that we brought up start to feel rear their ugly head, mm-hmm. just understand that this is just what it happens. Like, you know, there are plenty of shows that have that where they get really bad as they go along.
Yeah.
So just kind of acknowledge that and realize that, guess what? It's not going to be better. It's just good. This is kind of just what it is. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't enjoy the first part, because I think the first part is really enjoyable. I've still kept watching it. It's at this point, it's just like, you know, it's just momentum at this point.
Yeah.
But I would say watch it. And I think the characters are fun enough. The characters are likable enough. The cast is really good. The cast is really, really good. You do, and they do a really good job of this in the first season, and they really needed to, which is the idea that you need to like them.
Mm-hmm.
And you do. You really do like the guys. You really, they're very well played. They're very well written. They're very well acted. Like, you know, everything is kind of works, and you do really invest in them. And then the things that happen to them in early on, you really feel it.
Mm-hmm.
But just don't expect it necessarily to build to anything. So that's all I would say.
Yeah.
As far as non-spoiler stuff goes. So would you agree with that? Would you say that the first few are worth watching?
I could agree. Yeah. No, like, they were interesting enough where they held my attention, and I definitely, you know, I'd pay more attention next time, like, but I think they're definitely worth watching, because it helps you get invested into the characters, and it really builds that, like, sense of, like, oh, like, that connection that you need to continue watching.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's what we're going to say as far as non-spoiler stuff goes. So for the remainder of the show, we're going to be full spoilers ahead. Depending on, I don't know about Cheska, I don't know about you, but depending on how you want to be with as far as spoilers for stuff you haven't watched.
Because honestly, I'm not going to watch anymore.
I have a feeling that's the truth. So, so as far as the audience, as far as you audience members should be concerned, assume that spoilers will be present for every episode of the show. So anything is up for fair game, even stuff that Cheska hasn't seen. So if you haven't caught up fully, there could be spoilers here. So, so give me a little bit of a moment, I guess, to turn it off. Thank you very much for listening, by the way. All right. So, the moment that we alluded to, that the moment that you stopped watching, was when Opie died.
Oh, I got so upset.
Yeah. And I did too. And it's interesting that I find it very interesting that that's the moment you stopped watching. I'm very curious as to why that moment in particular made you guys stop watching.
It's like I felt more for Opie than I did any other character in that season or in that series. Because, like, you know, the whole thing with his wife getting killed because Clay was fucking stupid. And then, like, what is it? Like, he really only has his kids. And then, like, he gets involved with that porn star. And, you know, like, shit kind of happens. They get married. But then, like, what is it? She has an abortion and doesn't tell him, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that happens. And then, like, you know, he's a mess. Like, he doesn't know what to do. Like, he's really trying to, like, find his place, you know, with the club and everything. And then, like, his father gets killed by Clay. So that was, like, another thing. It's like, holy shit. And, like, he kind of almost gets his revenge on Clay by shooting him, but he doesn't kill him. He just severely injures him. And then, like, they end up in jail together, and, like, you know, it's, like, you can't help but feel bad for Opie. Like, this poor guy, like, it's, like, one thing after a fucking other with him.
Yeah, and the reason that I was curious, and the reason that I found it interesting that this was the point, and I will say Opie was far and away my favorite character on the show. Mm-hmm. I was actually spoiled about his death.
Really?
I think I was spoiled. It was like an interview. It was like an EW interview, like the day after the episode, because I watched it on delay. So the day after the episode, I hadn't watched it yet, and there was an interview with Ryan Hurst, and I'm like, oh, Ryan Hurst. And all of a sudden, it's like, so how do you feel about Opie? Like, what is it like to shoot your death scene? And I'm like, wah, come on. Why would you say that? I was very curious, but that was the moment in particular, because – and I definitely do agree that that was a hard moment to take in the show's history.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting because to me that moment could be seen almost that's one of those when I was saying like when the show does something that's just like, guess what, flipping the script.
But it was also like I felt like it kind of gave him like the release that he needed because he's like, I really don't have anything else to live for. If he thinks it, like, comment, like looking at his past like actions and like all the shit that's happened to him, like I could understand why he kind of volunteered himself to fight these guys and ultimately die. He's like, I really have nothing to lose. Like, you have your wife and your kids and blah blah blah. He's like, what do I have? I have nothing.
See, this is where I disagree with you on this, because I had a lot of problems with that moment in execution and in ultimately how everything resolves itself.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest problem with that scene was that idea that the character of Opie, and what was so great about the character of Opie was if you remember when we first met Opie was not in the club anymore.
He resigned himself
from the club. He'd basically done what Jax had paid lip service to doing all these years.
Yeah.
But he'd actually done it where he'd quit and left and was working and was not doing well. Like, he was struggling financially. Like, he was barely getting by. But he was trying to make an honest living and trying to be an honest person and be a family man, you know, because he was like, hey, guess what? He was always telling Jax, the club is toxic. Like, the club is not.
Yeah, like, you have to get away from this environment. Like, it's not good for you.
Yeah, and that's what, to me, Opie was the heart of the show.
Opie was
the character that I most identified with and most thought the show should focus on. He was, to me, if they had killed off Jax at some point and made the show Opie as the main character,
mm-hmm.
that would have made sense to me. And I would have think that the way they killed him off smacked really false for a number of reasons. The first of which being that it felt as if, because this had just come off the whole like Clay not dying because of the Deus Ex Mexicans coming in, which is what I call them, which is where the whole like that whole resolution made no sense, and it robbed the entire show of like dramatic pathos. The idea like Opie gets to shoot Clay in the chest a couple times, but guess what? Clay's fine.
Yeah, like, Clay's fine. It's like, that's not fair at all.
Yeah, I felt at the time that was almost Kurt Sutter being like, oh, I've got no balls. I refuse to kill off. Because there was also this season where Juice tried to kill himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't because the tree snapped.
Yep, he failed.
And that to me felt like, oh, yeah, you think I got no balls? Guess what? I'll kill off this guy. Now, I know there's more to the story because Ryan Hurst got a different show. So that was the contract thing. But the thing for me with that was just like, the character of Opie, to me, had always been the most responsible character. He was the moral heart of the show in the sense where none of the other characters were. And I feel like they want Jax to be. They really want Jax to be this idea of this white knight who's trapped in this terrible scenario. But it doesn't work because he's not. Because he's had multiple opportunities to get out. And he's never really tried to get out.
I feel like Opie was his foil, and it was a very good foil to have. And it was almost like, I felt like it was almost something that Jax could like aspire to be since Opie was still around.
Yeah. And the problem I had with his death scene was as follows. In my version of the character, Opie's wife is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Opie's father is dead.
Yep.
Opie's wife, Opie's new wife, Lila, is gone.
Yeah. She's up and left.
Yeah. There is no, in my mind, Opie opting to sacrifice himself, orphaning his kids, leaving, the only person those kids have left in their entire lives is him.
His mother, basically.
Him to sacrifice himself in the way he did is unconscionable, is so irresponsible.
It is.
And so short-sighted and just such a terrible thing to do. And he's like he really in one move became the worst father on television.
Oh, he did, basically, besides Walter White.
But like, even Walter White cared about his kids more than Opie did at the end. Like that to me was what the hell. Like, Opie, and that rang so false to me, because in my mind, like, because Opie was the guy, he left the club for his kids and his wife. He left because this idea that all of a sudden Opie would be the one who'd step up to the plate and say, kill me. And that's the thing. It wasn't as if he sacrificed himself in a way that was like a life or death scenario.
No, it wasn't.
It's not as if like a bullet was heading towards his best friend Jax and he like jumped in front of it. No, he knowingly sacrifices himself. He had time to think about it. He had time to consider everything. He knowingly throws himself to death, to certain death, leaving his, and that to me was like, what the fuck? And I was really upset about that.
That really made me mad. And, not gonna lie. It just felt like it was a cop-out. It was like, you would think that it would take a lot more for this man to go down rather than to just be like, basically gangbanged by, what, 3 or 4 black guys?
Yeah.
Mexicans, whatever the fuck they were.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I didn't really, like, look at, like, their race. I just saw, like, 3 angry men beating the shit out of Opie.
And there's one, this is kind of gets into more spoiler-ish stuff for later seasons and how the show plays out. The whole setup of this entire scenario is, and I love Tig. I do.
I love Tig.
He's a great character, and I love him on the show, and I think he's always great. The way that they set up the scenario and the way that this whole thing had been constructed was, I guess, in the way it was supposed to be constructed, I did not really understand why they did it the way they did it, because Tig went off half-cocked. Without any warning, with nothing. No one told him to do this. He acted alone. He did something incredibly irresponsibly, and he murdered an innocent woman.
Yep.
And the show wants us to feel as if he is the victim here. And I understand the whole burning of your daughter in front of you thing is a
terrible fucking thing.
But the whole idea that Opie would sacrifice himself, and that somehow, as the audience, we would sit there and go, "How horrible is it that they have to give Tig over to them, and they're going to kill him?" But really, realistically, Tig had it coming.
Yeah.
And the fact that Opie would do that made no sense. Like the fact that it would be one thing if they were just being threatened, if they were just being extorted for no reason. But what Tig did. He was. It's like the fact that they're working so hard to protect him now. The fact that, and again, I have no problem with that as a story beat. The idea that they're not willing to sacrifice one of their own guys, that's fine. But then to have Opie throw himself to death for Tig makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, especially when Tig is more in the wrong and like has more reason to be in there than he does.
Yeah, and the thing is, the show never acknowledges that. And moving forward, the character of Tig. Like, there needed to be a scene in which, like, there needed to be some ramifications for Tig. Because, realistically, Tig should be mentally destroyed by
this. Well, yeah, he should be.
Like, and there should be some idea that he should have some survivor's guilt. He should feel horrible. And he should, especially, like, about Opie, about the whole thing that went down. And it never really works that way. You're never meant to feel as if Tig is doing the wrong. You're never meant to feel, like, this could have been a moment where, there could have been a turning point where you see, like Jax is like, oh shit, this is wrong. How we can't get out of this? This is fucking dangerous. And Tig looks at it and goes, oh fuck, I did this. Like, but there are many moments in the show moving forward where Tig does stuff that is just as stupid, just as reckless. It never feels as if Tig really comes to terms with the fact of what he's done to Opie's children, because he's killed both of their parents at this point.
That's right.
And, like, he doesn't seem to ever show any remorse about it. And, like, and I get that, like, but it, that would be an interesting way to play that moment in that character if that was supposed to be it. But this is the problem that I have with Sons of Anarchy. And this is, you know, and this is what I want to say about it. And this is how I want to wrap up with our Sons of Anarchy. Unless you want to talk about more.
No, there's not a lot else that I really wanted to talk about.
I feel as if the show fundamentally doesn't understand the way that the audience sees their characters. This with Tig, for example, the audience wants you to think, or it seems as if the show wants you to think that what Tig did was not a horrible thing to do. And the show wants us. And the thing is, the whole Tig, like, getting... That plays out over not only that season, but in a significant portion of the next season is that whole, like, idea that he's going to get murdered by Damon Pope. That doesn't go away. That continues for the rest of that season, for a whole, basically a whole equivalent of a whole season. And I feel as if the show wants you to sit there and go, I'm so happy that Tig's alive. But it's just, I look at that and I'm like, okay. And it's a thoroughly, the more that it goes on and the more that you see these characters, the more that they interact, the more that they are put in repetitive situations, the more that they don't change their behavior. They react the same way.
Yeah.
The more I sit there and the less sympathetic I get to them, the less I sit there. You know, like the first few times this all stuff happened, I was like, oh, like I didn't really know. But it's like your friend who, you know, you drink with, and every time you drink with them, they tell you, they're always like, oh man, here are my problems. Here's everything that's wrong with you. And the first few times you're like, hey man, here's what, you know, like, you know, you can fix this. Like, and you go through them and you help them and you like, you give them some advice and you listen to them and you listen to them tell their problems and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
And you feel like, oh, this is great. And then you walk away and then you come back. And the next time you talk to them, they're like, oh man, they hear my problems. And it's the exact same problems. And you're like,
it is. It's just rewritten into like a different scenario.
And you're like, hey, we talked about this last time. So what did you do about it? And you're like, oh, I didn't do anything. I'm like, but they just keep doing the same problems over and over again. And they keep whining about them over and over again. And they keep wanting you to feel just as sorry for them over and over again. And every time they do, and they do nothing about it and nothing changes, you sit there and you're like, fuck you. Like, I'm not going to keep. And that's what Sons of Anarchy has become. And these characters have become where they keep looking for the same emotional resonance. The best example of this is the character of Gemma. By the end of season 6, the character of Gemma is just a mess. Like,
Gemma to begin with too.
Yeah.
And now she's just like, I don't want to have anything to do with that woman now.
You understood her. That's the whole thing. Like, she did bad stuff, but mm-hmm. her bad stuff was always understandable. It was always like, you understood her motivation and like for the family. And she was always trying to protect her family. But the longer it goes on and like the end of season 6, she does something really, really heinous to her family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard what she does.
Wait, what does she do? I was thinking about that she was cheating on Clay, but that was something else.
Do you actually want to know what at the end of the
season? I
want to
know, because I'm not going to fucking watch it.
Okay. The end of season 6 ends with Gemma murdering Tara. Yeah.
Bitch had it coming.
She...
Oh my god.
She murders her in her kitchen with one of those like things, like an ice pick, not an ice pick, but like the prong. Oh,
holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah, she does.
That's terrible.
But that's where the show is at this point. Like,
oh my god.
You know, I can't even tell you, there's so many people who are dead by this point too. It's just like, and they're just dropping bodies. They're just doing this. They're just doing that. Like it's just gotten to the point of absurdity. And yeah, and like the character of Gemma, where – and this is exactly what happened with Clay too, where they put Clay to such a ridiculous degree that he had to be killed, and he's dead now. But
that is crazy.
And he had to be killed, but then they didn't do it. And that's the whole thing, is like, because they – in their mind, they're like, oh, this whole drama of him being alive is what's compelling. No, it's just a fundamental misunderstanding of how the audience is seeing what you're making. Yeah. That's what this show, and it just keeps going. Like, it keeps going with the exact same beats. Guess what? Tara's trying to get away. She's trying to get her kids out of the gang,
but she can't because, oh my god, Jax.
No,
and I kind of want to be with him, but I really shouldn't because he's dangerous.
Yeah, and I'll tell you off air. I don't want to just go into like, because I don't That's really fine. Have anything to say necessarily about it, like as in terms of like criticism or editorial. So mm-hmm. it would just be me relating what happens, but I can do that to you off air.
That's fine.
But we should probably wrap up. So that's what I'll say about, like, if as a person who liked Sons of Anarchy, as a person who enjoyed the first 3 seasons, the problem is that it's a character based show, but the more these characters refuse to, it's a character based show and it's afraid to move off the status quo. The problem is the more these characters refuse to move off their status quo, the less sympathetic they become, because the more they start to just seem phony, the more they start to mm-hmm. just seem. And the other problem is at that point, if the characters are phony and the problems that they're experiencing, the internal problems and the interpersonal problems, if those start to become more and more cliche, the way that the show deals with it is just by increasing the level of absurdity. Like, it's just like the violence, the amount of people who die, the amount of gunfights. Like, this season is the newest season is absurd. Like, every single meeting ends with a gun, like a giant murder fest. Like, where, like, entire sides are murdered, and it's like, guess what? Double cross. Like, and they do it, like, 8 times. Like, it's ridiculous blood, like, bloodshed. There's, like, that's the way that the show has decided to get more, you know, it's like, because you have to keep raising the bar. The way, instead of just raising the bar in terms of character, they've raised the bar in terms of just unnecessary graphic violence.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, but I still enjoy the show's early season. I still find something like it's one of those shows. If any show would benefit from having a fixed end point, this is the show. They need to be working towards something because it just doesn't feel like they are.
I don't think they plan to anytime soon.
I don't know what I could look it up. I don't know what it is, but yeah, it's a very complicated show, and it's always enjoyable. And it's the kind of thing where they always can hook you in the middle, but you know, if it never, ever really builds to anything, then ultimately what was the point?
Yeah.
So that's what I'll say about Sons of Anarchy overall. And that's what prevents it from being a great show.
God damn you, Sons of Anarchy.
All right. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Braingasm Podcast.
Oh, my.
My name has been Ben.
And I'm Cheska.
You can follow me on Twitter at BraingasmBen. You can follow the show on Twitter at BraingasmPod. Go ahead, like us on Facebook. We're now over 100 likes on Facebook.
Woo!
Which, yeah, is not a big number, but who cares?
It's still big for us, and I think it's good.
Yeah, it's fun. Let's see, anything else that I have to plug that's coming up? No news on the DVD front yet. The video is still up. You can still listen to, or you can still go watch it. It's pretty funny. Did you end up watching it?
Wait, the DVD? No.
Or no, we'll watch. I'll show you the video after we.
Yeah, but it's like you never sent me like anything.
Yeah. So yeah. So as I said, I will get you guys news of that as soon as it comes out. I don't really have anything else to plug as far as comedy stuff goes. Gasm of Thrones will be coming back soon. I guess because April is beginning of April's next week. So I guess it'll be 2 weeks from now. So like this time, 2 weeks from now ish, will be Gasm of Thrones will be back, and Braingasm will continue as always.
Hooray.
I think that is it. Yeah, that's it for me.
Okay. You can follow me on Twitter at @OSugar at twitter.com. You can follow me on Tumblr at jailhouserockabetty.tumblr.com. I post a lot of really stupid shit, a lot of cars and motorcycles and pinup girls and sometimes some porn. But if you don't mind that, and you can see like all the really funny shit that I also post. Trying to think. You could friend me on Facebook. I like talking to people. I say this every week and no one fucking friends me.
Yeah. Stop being dicks.
It's all right. It happens. But, yeah. That's about it for me. I don't know.
All right. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Braingasm Podcast. Thank you very much for listening and good night.
Good night.